redkey.org. If you believe in radio not sponsored by corporations but sponsored by you, the people, please call and make your pledge at 818-985-5735. That is 818-985-5735. Peace and love.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. Go to AutoWeek.com, click on all my articles, and put nice comments on them, please. Thank you very much. I am joined this week and every week by the greatest co-host in the world, a practicing attorney specializing in automotive law, our Orange County Bureau Chief, Motor Press Guild member, and the owner of two Mazdas, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. Great to be here with you, and I can't wait to hear all about your awake time in Nürburgring.
Nürburgring.
Checking out the 24-hour race.
It was fun. Okay. And we're also covering it. But wait, let me introduce our other guest host. He's not a guest host anymore. He's like semi-permanent. He took the crown. He's like Napoleon. He took the crown, put it on his head. He is here maybe forever. Who knows? A man with a resume too long to list here because we only have 58 minutes. But the only thing you needed to know about him was he was at Super Street. He is now an executive analyst at IC Cars, Carl the Power Brower. Carl, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me on yet again, Mark. You still haven't gotten sick of me, unbelievably. And
it's coming. Yes. Hang on.
I know. It'll get there eventually.
In this show.
Yeah, it could. It could. And remember, it's not
right here. Just what was that movie with the Dr. Evil? He's got the button. He pushes it.
Yeah, and it's not the Coke button. It really is a scary red button. But yeah, no, I wasn't just there at Super Street. Let's just get the record straight. I was there to launch Super Street magazine.
Ladies and gentlemen, the launcher of Super Street. If we had a real budget, we'd have one of those fake applause things, but we don't have a real budget. So, all right.
And we have to go. Well,
we have. That is not everybody we have on the show. We are very honored to have with us Oliver S. Wang, curator for the upcoming exhibit Cruising J-Town. He is going to speak to us on Japanese American car culture and the exhibit that is coming to the Mullen Gallery on the South Campus of the Arts Center starting July 31st. So we actually have some time to prepare for this. So Oliver Wang, should we say Dr. Oliver Wang?
Let's just keep it Oliver. We don't need to get that formal.
But do you have a doctorate?
I do, yes.
We're calling you Dr. Wang because none of us
have a doctorate.
Yes. Actually, no, Michelle has a Juris Doctorate. So
it's an overeducated group of people right here.
All right.
But yeah. In all seriousness,
well, no, not Carl and I. Carl and I.
No, you guys are helping pull the average up, but thank you for being here.
No danger of overeducation among us. Okay. It's really easy to stray here, and we want to stick with it because we are glad to have you here, Dr. Wang. Could tell us about what this exhibit has and what it shows and why it was done.
Sure. So Cruising J-Town, Behind the Wheel of the Nikkei Community, is an exhibition that is devoted to the 100-plus year social history of the Japanese-American community here in Southern California and its long and complex relationship to the world of cars and trucks. And so usually I need to explain to people the exhibition is really not about cars specifically. It's really about people in a community and, again, the relationship to cars. And so within this, and this also includes a companion book that's going to be published at the same time by Angel City Press, we cover everything from street racers to drag racers to drift racers to people who ran gas stations to gardeners in their pickup trucks to people who drove fish trucks to people who helped design cars, industry executives. You sort of name it. The joke that I've made over the years, and we've been working on this for quite a long time, is that if you have a story that is about someone of Japanese American descent that is based somehow in the Los Angeles area and has something to do with the world of cars, I'm at least interested in hearing what that is. And so largely because, best as we know, no one has ever mounted an exhibition or book that deals with any of these topics comprehensively, we really wanted to cover as much of a breadth of history of history and stories as possible, especially just given the longstanding nature of this community, the way in which they have been rooted here in the LA area going back to the early 1900s, and the ways in which cars and trucks have followed them in various ways for work, for pleasure, for, you know, for sports, for, you know, you name it. And we're trying to cover it all in some way or form.
Now, we talked about this here on the car show. I think it was 3 years ago when you were trying to, you were soliciting an audience to bring in their pictures, any picture that they had of a Japanese guy or family with a car in Los Angeles. And then it took that long for this exhibit to come to fruition. Is that the case?
Well, I mean, this would have been mounted years ago, except we lost 2 years because of the pandemic. And as I've learned the hard way, and again, I'm coming from this from the world, as you mentioned, my day job is I'm a sociology professor at Long Beach State. So this is my first time curating. So I'm learning a lot of things for the first time. But in terms of getting this scheduled, in terms of having a venue for it, normally this would have been at the Japanese American National Museum, who is producing the exhibition. But because they're closed for a major renovation, we needed to find an alternate venue. And the Mullen Gallery at the Art Center College of Design turned out to be a really perfect plan B option for us. But it did mean that we had to move things later than I think what we originally intended. Though, as I've learned, this is not unusual in museum land.
Okay, when people go on starting July 31st and running through November 12th at the South Campus of the Arts Center College of Design there, right where the freeway ends, I believe, Pasadena, where the Pasadena freeway ends, where the first red light is, if you look to your left diagonally, that big building used to be an engineering building, and I believe Peter Mullen generously bought it and donated it to the Arts Center. If people go there July 31st, what are they going to see?
They will see, we'll have room for 5 cars, and each of them represent, our exhibition is split into 4 themes. We have speed, which is all about racing and performance. We have style, which is about design, customization, and drift racing. We have work, which kind of self-explanatory, but the role of work vehicles. And then last but certainly not least, we have community, which covers many different aspects and the ways in which people connect with each other intergenerationally through friendships, etc., through cars. So we'll have 5 cars that represent those themes. We'll have photos. We will have everything from racing helmets to fire suits. A lot of kind of unique objects belonging to everyone from auto designer Larry Shinoda, who, of course, attended Art Center for their transportation design program back when he was in his 20s, to I just picked up from Bruce Meyer's collection yesterday. We have it on loan. Jimmy Yamane's helmet. And Jimmy Yamane was the world's first go-kart champion back in 1959 when the championship was held down in Nassau in the Bahamas. And so they would have loaned us his go-kart, but unfortunately it's installed vertically in the Meyer space. And so not that easy to deinstall, but they did lend us his helmet. So we have that. It would take me forever here to go through everything that we have. But
just tell us the 5 cars.
Sure. So we have a 1940 hot rod called the Meteor that was formerly owned by George Nakamura. It is built from a Model T truck platform, but was largely outfitted by its original builder, Alfred Churchill, with discarded aerospace parts back in the late 1930s. The wheels are taken from a dive bomber. The steering wheel is a pilot's yoke. And when George purchased it, he had the intention, he bought it in 1940, he had the intention of taking it out for speed trials. But then 1942 rolled around and him and his family and 120,000 other Japanese Americans on the West Coast were all forcibly sent and incarcerated for the duration of the war. And so he had to abandon his car, which he did leave behind with a friend who basically kept the car for the next 60 years or so before returning it to George.
He kept it for 60 years?
Yeah, George, he didn't want the car back. I think it was a painful memory the life that he had to leave behind. His friend kept it safe. Yeah.
I was lucky enough to speak to Larry Shinoda several times over the years, and he was still angry about that experience. Oh, yeah. His family had that same experience.
And, yeah.
It's really something. So we got the Meteor. What other cars?
All right. So we got that. We have a 1956 Ford F-100 pickup truck once owned by Yoshio Shimazu, also known as the Hot Rod Gardener of West L.A., because when his original engine went kaput, he had a Hemi put in just for kicks. And that pickup has just been restored by his son, Kirk. We have a 1951 chopped, heavily modified and customized Mercury Coupe known as the Purple Rain, originally purchased by Yanni Kuyama, who was a car customizer back in the 1950s and 60s.
That sounds like it would look really cool. I assume it looks really cool.
It was very much inspired by the Hirohata Merc, which owned by Bob Hirohata, a Nisei guy from Los Angeles, from Monrovia, to be more specifically. And yeah, the Purple Rain is a showstopper. I mean, it's astounding. It's again, chopped, lowered, the whole nine. It's a beautiful, beautiful car. We have a 1973 Datsun 510 owned by former street racer Todd Kaneko, because we can't do an exhibit on JA car culture and not have a 510, or I guess the alternative would have been a Z in the mix. But one of those two cars had to be there because this was like the original import tuner dating back to the 1970s. And then we have a 1989 Nissan 240SX owned by Nadine Sachiko Shu, who was a pro drift racer back in the 2000s and the founder of the Drifting Pretty team and driving school. I think that was five. Was that five? I think that was five.
That was five. Sounds like five. That is a nice sounding collection of cars, and I'm sure you could have brought a lot more than five, but as you said, you're limited by space.
Yeah. If we could have gone 20 cars, it would have been amazing.
You know, one thing that I, if I ever get the chance to nerf the people at, is that the word, the people up at Pebble Beach, I have pointed out that there has never been a class for Japanese cars at Pebble Beach. And they say, no, man, this is the tone they use too. No way, man. Okay, they don't say that. But they had a Toyota 2000 GT in the 70s or something parked on the lawn. And then they last year when I said that, they said, no, we had a couple of cars that were designed by Japanese designers. And I said, okay, good for you. That's a start. But there's no class at Pebble. The Peterson Museum has had cruise-ins for Japanese cars.
Right.
Several other museums, the one up in Seattle in Tacoma, they've had a class there. Others have had exhibits on Japanese cars, but it seems to be the kind of thing that when it does happen, if it happens, it's still noteworthy. It's not every day. It's like if you said, oh, we're having an exhibit on Duesenbergs. Yeah, good for you, because you know there have been a lot of those, but there still has not been an exhibit on Japanese cars. Why is that? And when is that going to happen? Like, for instance, at Pebble or somewhere else?
Oh, wow. That's a complicated question. So let's see, a few things that come to mind.
You have 3 minutes.
I mean, the Peterson actually did mount, this is before the pandemic, but they mounted a pretty significant show devoted to the design of JDM, Japanese domestic cars. That's probably the biggest that I've seen on the West Coast in terms of within a museum space. And of course, every fall for 20 plus years now, there is the Japanese classic car show that's hosted down there
right. On
the Marina Green. And that has become the biggest show of its kind, not just right. In the West Coast, just in the United States.
Put on, I might add, by two Japanese couple and many, many volunteers and enthusiasts.
Right. And many of those participants and judges come from the longstanding Japanese American community, especially from like Ardeen and Torrance, the South Bay and so forth. But to answer your question, Mark, I think there is still this bias against Japanese imports. And we can go all the way back to the 1970s and 80s where, very famously they would have these, in baseball stadiums, they would have these like trash of Japanese import days. So a lot of it is tied up into sort of larger economic competition. There's obviously remnants of anti-Japanese sentiment that link back to the bombing of Pearl Harbor and World War II. And I think there's a sense of kind of nationalistic, jingoistic pride in American domestics and sort of this admiration for European cars. It doesn't really necessarily extend in the same way to Japanese cars, even though there are, of course, decades now of terms of design and engineering and all that, that these cars can compete at the highest level in whatever capacity you would like. But it's still slow to catch on.
Is there anybody petitioning Pebble for a class?
You know, it's a great question. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if there was. You know, one of the people that I've worked with and spoken to a few times about this is Ernie Nagamatsu, who you might know. He owns Old Yeller 2. He's been at Pebble Beach. He's displayed his collection there. I'm sure he's probably, you know, pitched it to them at some point.
And I will say Ed Lowe, editor of Motor Trend, has been behind and involved in a display sponsored by Infiniti of Japanese cars. But it's not on the green at Pebble. It's literally, I don't know if it's a half mile walk, but it's a good walk away from the green up the hill. And I think the only way that they're able to do that is that Infiniti supports it. Also, not the only way. I mean, Ed's hard work and many other people putting that together. But yeah, it's something that there is still work to be done.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm hoping that our exhibition, even though it's not focused on Japanese cars in the U.S., it's focused on the Japanese American community, and a lot of whom drove and still love American domestics and European imports. But nonetheless, I mean, I do hope that this kind of raising the awareness, as they say, and just showing the richness of the stories and all of these car histories and car stories will move the needle in some direction. But it is an ongoing challenge, as you're pointing out.
Well, as we said earlier, our own Carl Brower was a founder of Super Street, which, of course, is a celebration of Japanese cars, among many other things. So, all right, be sure and check this out. It opens July 31st at the Mullen, what do you call it? The Mullen Gallery.
Yes, the Mullen Gallery.
In the Transportation Designs Arts Center, College of Designs. Building there at the end of the Pasadena Freeway. It runs from, tell us again what the dates are.
It runs from July 31st through November 12th, 2025. I believe the open hours are Wednesdays through Sundays, noon to 5 o'clock.
Very good. Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Oh, Michelle, yes.
Can you just drop in or do you have to buy tickets ahead of time?
These are free. So people are welcome to drop in, and we want to have as many people come through as possible in the 3.5 months that we're going to be up for.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the car show, Dr. Wang, as we like to call you, even though you don't like that title. Thank you very much. And everybody be sure and check that out when it comes along. Dr. Wang, I'm going to hit a button that sends you off into oblivion. Don't take it personally.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark. Appreciate it.
Right. Thank you for your time.
Take care.
Okay, so that is a cool sounding show. Yeah, we talked about that. Do you guys remember? Well, neither one of you were here, I don't think.
Well, I wasn't around. Nope.
Oh.
That predated me by about a year or two.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Good. Looking forward to that when that comes out. In the meantime, we ate up a lot of our calendar section. So what do we want to start out with here? Oh, yeah. Right now, this very second, you can watch live on your laptop, the 24 hours of Spa. Now, we're going to talk a little bit later about the 24 hours of Nürburgring, which happened last week and which I attended. I am not going to be at Spa because obviously I'm here in LA talking to you, but that is going on right now. That race has GT3 cars. So if you like Porsche 911s, Lamborghini Huracans, Aston Martins, BMWs, just and there are even three Mustang GT3s in this race right now. It is really cool racing. It goes on through the night. It's a 24-hour race. Goes on through the night. Last year, it was crazy. They had thunderstorms, lightning, rain crashing down, and a finish that just was a real heartbreaker. The Ferrari was leading, and Ferrari came into the pits for the final splash of fuel and tires, and a Lamborghini was parked and blocking pit entrance. So who knows what'll happen this year. If you want to watch this, you can go to CrowdStrike. What are you saying, Michelle?
I just said something in Italian. Go ahead.
Okay. you can go to CrowdStrike24HoursOfSpa.com/watch-live, and you can see that. The race started 7:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time and will go to 7:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time Sunday, tomorrow. So that's really cool. It's fun. I try and watch it when I can. It's like watching the 24 hours of Le Mans anyway. Aww. So
you watch the beginning, you go do stuff, and then you watch the end.
Michelle does not have the right attitude on this matter. Michelle, I'm going to hit your button and remove you.
Hey.
There she goes. And then next event, Cars and Coffee Altadena. We like to give that a little plug. That is taking place where there was that unfortunate, terrible fire that burned through there. And the people are still coming together and celebrating cars. Cars and Coffee Altadena every Saturday morning. So you missed this Saturday morning, but it's every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. at 749 East Altadena Drive in Altadena. It's called simply Cars and Coffee Altadena. Michelle, what's going on down in your neck of the woods down there?
Well, for you Corvette fans, there's an event at the Marconi in Tustin this tomorrow, Sunday, June 29th from 9 to 11. And that's going to be Corvettes and more Corvettes. But okay. While you're there, you'll also see a lot of Italian cars. There are Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and a lot of other fun things at the Marconi.
I think they have a Formula One car there, don't they?
I think they do.
They have a Ferrari Formula One car.
It's been a few years since I've been over there.
All right.
Yeah. All right. If you want to go, that's $15. You can pay at the door.
Easy peasy. MarconiMuseum.org/Corvette Day.
That's it.
Carl, you want to take us to the Lion Air Museum? We lost Carl. Carl left.
Oh no. Carl said he was having a little trouble. So, okay. We'll just have to pick up where he left off here.
If he can, Carl, if you can hear us, which obviously you can't. Okay, he's gone.
So we have a microcars exhibit at the Lion Air Museum, which starts July 1st, and that runs through September 1st. So do you want to see microcars? You know, are those the little ones like the BMW Isetta?
Yeah.
Is that what they talk about when they're talking microcars?
I think that is. Now, they did not release any. They didn't. Oh, Carl's back. Wait, he's slowly coming back. Carl, buy a better laptop. Buy a better laptop.
It's not the laptop. It's the internet connection. But anyway,
does yours have those tubes that warm up? Is that the problem?
Well, he's
maybe. And you know that little light that, like, when you turn it off, it all goes down to a little light and then it slowly fades away. Oh, wait, that's a tube.
I cannot razz anybody about computers, given my monkey-like understanding of them. So anyway, we're talking about the Lion Air Museum.
Yeah, they have this microcars exhibit. So we were talking about the kinds of things you might see there, like a BMW Isetta. Other cute cars like, I don't know, a Nash Metro to me. No, maybe. They're just the cutest thing. Anyway.
Yeah, they are.
While you're there, you'll also see the summer exhibit that's going on with their historic Warcraft, and they have WW2 memorabilia. And for the price of admission, you get both. So
they have some fantastic airplanes there. They have a B-17, which kind of takes
I was just going to say, people should know they don't just going to see cool cars if they go to the Lion Air Museum. They should probably figure that out from the name of the museum, but. Yeah, if you just wanted to go and look at airplanes, it'd be worth your time. The cars are a pure bonus. So,
love that place. It's right there at the, basically, on the tarmac at John Wayne Airport.
Right.
Yeah. If you want more information. There you go. LionAirMuseum.org.
And you spell Lion how?
L-Y-O-N.
Very
After General William Lyon, who founded it.
Yeah, and a great car collector. I think he's won Pebble a couple of times. And his family is still involved in it.
Yes.
And it's a wonderful place. Go check it out. The 46th annual East Side Story. Isn't that a great name? East Side Story Car Show and Music Fiesta, July 12th, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. will be taking place at the Fairplex in Pomona. So there's going to be lowriders there, but all kinds of other things going on. Featuring only the best, most relevant R&B classic. I hate when they get the irrelevant R&B classic, but they have doo-wop. They have everything. So there's music and cars. That's at the Fairplex in Pomona on July 12th. Check it out at eastsidestoryoriginal.com. And then, Carl, we have JDM versus Euro Car Show. Have you heard about this at all? We're out of time.
Oh, I have. And it is another fun way to get the automotive passion going. You know, there's plenty of people who like both, such as me and probably everyone on this show. But it is fun to see these two kind of different cultures of car passion at one show and have people kind of lining up on each side saying, all the Euro. No, Japanese.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be like a dance-off, like in West Side Story.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Once you're a jet, you were always a jet from your first cigarette. I was in that in high school, I want you to know.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Were you the one with the social disease, or who were you?
That was a good. You've seen West Side Story. The depth and breadth of our studio staff never ceases to amaze me.
Oh my God, we're rolling out of a chair right now.
We'll make a knowing reference to West Side Story. What could possibly?
Well, he could have been Maria.
Dr. Gower from now on.
That
was good. That was you. But enough.
That shows that, real quick, that shows at 1000 East 60th Street in Los Angeles. Tickets are $20. Again, July 12th. You should go check it out. And you can go find more at JDM vs Euro, as in JDM versus European, JDMVSEuro.com/tickets.
Very good. All right. We're way over time on our calendar. That's more than you ever wanted to know, because Carl is going to take us down yet another primrose path to cheap cars. Carl, tell us what we have.
That's right. Now I'm going to tell you more than you ever wanted to know about used car pricing. This time we're going to talk about how much prices have gone up since COVID, and everyone's like, yeah, I know cars are expensive. Well, let's get data just to paint the picture with some facts and scary figures. And in this case, in 2019, if you had $20,000 as a budget to buy a used car, you had access to 49.3% of the three-year-old used cars in 2019. So just call it half of them in 2019 with $20,000. Today, that same $20,000 would get you access to 11.5% of the three-year-old used cars in the used car market. So it's dropped just a teensy tiny, or actually like to a less than a quarter of what you used to be able to buy. So, and when you looked at, we just did a study at iccars.com where I'm executive analyst, and we are always looking at what's going on with the car world, the car trends, and trying to help people who are buying cars figure out what they should be doing and where they should be looking for the best deals. And unfortunately, there's not very many good deals by 2019 standards anywhere today, but you at least can get a sense of what are the best deals in the 2025 world if you go to the site. And this study we just did really just wanted to kind of call out, you know, essentially that kind of 30,000 is the new 20,000 as far as when you're buying a car. You really just need like 30% more money, or 50% more money, sadly, to get a vehicle, the same kind of vehicle. And some examples of three-year-old used models that used to sell for under 20,000 but don't anymore include Chevrolet Equinox, Honda Civic, Kia Sportage, Nissan Rogue, Toyota Camry, and Toyota Corolla. All those models, and you've probably heard of all of them before, on average, 3 years old, they were under $20,000 in 2019. In 2025, they're all over $20,000 now for an average price.
It's going up. Inflation. Is that inflation or what is it? Oh, you always talk about supply and demand, right?
It's both. Yeah. So inflation, like if we hadn't had the COVID issue that restricted new car supply and production, I should say, in 2020 to 2022. We'd still have higher prices just from inflation. And if we hadn't had inflation and just had the restricted supply in those years, we'd have higher car prices because of the lack of supply. But we've got both. And that's where you get a, you know, jump from kind of needing $30,000 where you used to only need $20,000 to get the same car. But yeah, I call it the COVID hangover, right? We feel like COVID, that's so like, you know, 2021, 2022. It's like, yeah, it is. But how many people who are buying a used car are shopping for used cars that should have and could have, but weren't produced in 2020 to 2022. That's the average person's buying a 3 to 4 year old car when they're buying a used car. And that means they're buying cars from the years when a bunch of auto plants globally were shut down and they weren't producing cars. And so now those cars aren't around for us to buy. Plus, a lot of people who are on leasing their cars are buying them at the end of the 3 year lease because they realize that everything's so expensive now. They're like, I'll just use my lease buyout. And that's the supply of the used car market, which hasn't been as helpful of a supply.
Okay. Could I veer off just a little bit from that? New cars under $20,000, there's not very many of those.
No. And that we've done, and we've looked at that too. And yeah, those are essentially gone. You know, I think the Mirage and maybe the Versa in their most base trim
are like
the Hyundai Venue, the Kia Rio.
I don't know if you can get those. I can look it up right now, but I don't know if you can
Get to look it up. Look it up. He's an analyst, folks, so he can do these things. He has a mystic power. But I think the problem with those, obviously, is car companies don't make any money on them. Now, what they can do is they can sell them to people, and while not making money on them, they hook the people into the brand. And if brand loyalty, in fact, is anything anymore, which it's becoming less and less, you know, I myself grew up in a Ford family. I didn't even know I was in a Ford family. But
so you were correct, Mark. The Nissan, the Versa, the Trax, the Soul. Well, no, that's barely that's the Kia Soul, the Hyundai Kona, the Nissan Sentra, and the Kia Rio. I think was is around like 17,000 too. So you can get like six cars in their most base models for right at or right below 20,000.
Why would a car maker offer that?
Well. In theory, they're trying to capture new buyers as they're coming out of school or out of college. And the idea is that, oh man, I bought this used or I bought this brand new Nissan Versa and it was so nice. I'm going to keep buying Nissans. That's the reason to do it. But you asked the right question because a lot of people's answer is there is no reason. They'd rather focus on, you know, $30,000+ cars where you get into RAV4s and CRVs and stuff because those have a much higher demand, a much wider audience and much better profit margin. Than the sub $20,000 car.
So everybody wants to make money. It appears it's capitalism. Yeah. Comes down to capitalism. What can you
it's
say?
It's pretty painful.
All right. Thank you for that report, Carl. We move to our other Orange County bureau chief, Michelle Spencer. Do you have a report for us, Michelle?
I do, but this report is actually out of Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Because remember how the Tesla company relocated from Northern California a few years back to Austin, Texas. And the news isn't that. It's that this week they decided to have the launch of the robo-taxi down there in Austin. And the special guests who were invited, not us, but influencers, Tesla investors, and other special VIPs were there to observe the robo-taxi launch. And this is long, long, long awaited. This is something that Elon Musk has been promising for years. And it was actually a key thing that the investors were really waiting on for profits to go up and things to sort of kickstart at that company that's kind of gotten into the doldrums a little bit. So this was huge. And the problem reported by Fortune magazine was that the robo-taxis were doing some strange things during the launch and how there were videos posted by the influencers of unexpected vehicle behavior. There was things like hesitation at intersections. When it should have been going forward, it was hesitating. The robo-taxi was also videoed entering a lane for travel in the opposite direction, which is very hazardous. It's called a wrong-way driver right there. Not only illegal, but very dangerous. Then video also captured robo-taxis crossing a double solid yellow line. And another driver is heard honking at that robo-taxi engaged in that maneuver. Then there was a hard braking by a robo-taxi captured when it was passing by some police cars. The police cars were not in front of it. Okay. There was no reason for it to stop. So it was stopping when it shouldn't have been. So this is a problem. And then.
Musk has debuted this before it's ready.
Correct. I feel like it's a premature launch and you shouldn't. Well, let's go back to the Cybertruck. When that got launched and he threw the hard ball at the window,
who can
forget that?
I was there, man. He threw two of them and it didn't break the window. Well, yeah, it did. It embedded itself in the glass.
Yeah.
That was the last time that he did a product launch for the press. After that, if he had something, he would organize a bunch of fanboys and have them stay.
So are you suggesting that Elon suffers from premature electrification? Is that what you guys are telling
me? Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Be here all.
Well, we're not going to get into personal stuff, but the robo-taxi.
That's how he got 45 kids.
Yeah, by 20 different moms. So I guess
this is getting awfully catty.
Hit them quick and get out of there. Okay, so
talking about delivery of jokes on the show.
Okay, now this
be clear.
Is for so. For him and his physician to handle. However, right. we did see video, and NHTSA is in now got their eyebrows raised and are hovering over this launch and waiting for other people to report things that are irregular and not okay in terms of safety, because we can't have this happening. You know, it does raise the old debate, which Dave Stahl and I used to talk about all the time on the show in San Diego. Is it better for humans to be at the wheel, or are these AI and computer-generated drivers going to increase safety?
Well, statistically speaking, it's supposed to be better for these robots to be driving, because
correct.
We humans, as good a drivers as we all are, the robots just go by the rules. But I myself have witnessed Waymo cars just sitting at intersections when they had a green light, not moving, people behind them flipping them off. I'm waiting to see a robot finger come out of a Waymo. And I think that's
good. Scary. Yeah. I think we need that.
And,
somebody.
And to be clear, there is no NHTSA investigation underway correct. Yet about this. We have to be clear about that, because
I like that you used the word yet there, Mark, but keep going. Yes.
Yeah. Just as the show does not have a Peabody yet, but it might.
Okay.
Right.
But, yeah, we'll get there.
Well, I would just jump in here and say that you know, the problem with the computer-driven car is that nobody is happy about 40,000 plus deaths on the highways caused by humans every year, but they're so much more tolerant, for better or for worse, I'm not saying they're right, than a single death, you know, caused by a computer-controlled vehicle. Yeah. And there's been a couple deaths by computer-controlled vehicles, like, you know, you can count on one hand since the starting of this testing. And every one of them, you know, is a national news story for multiple days. And arguably one of them killed the GM's Cruise, driving program. So autonomous driving program. So, and that's the joke that, or not the joke, that's the saying that everyone says is, they have to be right 100% of the time. And if these cars are right 99.5% of the time, that seems like that's a pretty good record, Carl. Yep. But that 0.5% will literally and figuratively kill the program, because that's all you need is one of those or a few of those. And then nobody's going to want to get those cars or get near them.
Having ridden in a couple of Waymos, the experience was fine. For me, I would think, though, that a better application of this would be getting semis to drive across Texas, because
yes.
you can do that, in my opinion, with level 2 driving, which is available in almost any car now. And that is not happening yet, I don't think. But
no, but you're right. And that would where it would make more sense, because there's all these good rules about how long a human driver can drive in a really multi-ton vehicle, you know, several ton vehicle that could kill a lot of people if it was out of control, and then they can't drive any further. But if someone's going from Austin to LA and 90% of that drive isn't even near a population center on an extremely straight 10 freeway without even, you know, elevation, let alone, you know, angle changes, and the truck could drive itself for most of that 80%, and let the driver certifiably be considered sleeping, but or at least relaxing and ready to take control, that would be great.
There is a lot more data getting fed into that little brain that's operating a Waymo car than there would be fed into a semi driving across New Mexico, Arizona, the Mojave.
Yeah.
It's just two straight lines. You know, it's white line fever, baby. Okay, well, we'll keep you up to date on this. Thank you both for that. I have found something out that was a complete surprise to me. Faraday Future not only still exists, but has actually delivered cars.
No way. I don't believe it. I'm calling fake news here.
This was in AutoWeek, AutoWeek.com, so it must be true.
But if we haven't seen one in Orange County, then it doesn't exist.
That's true.
They actually did this. They are still in business. And goodness gracious. Okay, a total of 16 cars. Faraday Future has delivered a grand total of 16 cars since deliveries began in 2023. 10 were sold in the first year, followed by 4 in 2024, and another two have found homes so far this year.
Oh, has anyone told Faraday that they're moving in the wrong direction in terms of what scaling up production is, that the graph's backwards?
I will say that building a car is far more complicated than almost anybody realizes. The Faraday Future, the FF91, carries a base price of $249,000.
So at least they're accessible, people.
It doesn't say whether those cars were purchased or forced upon employees. We don't know. We don't know that. Anyway. But you know, I think it's good. We should be supportive of car makers, just because the more cars that we have, the more interesting car life is. And so, you know.
No, you're right, Mark. We should be supportive of car makers. Unfortunately, we know that all the support in the world, still not going to help most of these startups.
Yeah.
But anyways, that do I sound like a cynical old crusty automotive journalist? Because that's what I am. So I should sound like it.
That's what we are, baby.
When you've watched the 18th, car company that in its first announcements, we're going to change the world with the best car ever. And speaking of 18 months later, so where's that car you were talking about? Okay, 38 months later, 78 months later. So where's that car you were talking about?
Well, what are you getting for $249,000? Is it that good?
It's basically a sort of a large SUV, I would say. You know, okay. I mean, did I drive it? Yeah, I drove one about 5 years ago at CES. And of course, it was very early prototype, so you can't judge the fit and finish and everything. But you know, it worked. I was able to, you know, step on the accelerator and went forward. It steered. So anyway,
well, you were talking.
We're out of time in the news. What car?
You were saying if we haven't seen one in Orange County, Michelle. Now that I think about it, at the Orange County, South Orange County Cars and Coffee down there in San Clemente, probably 3 years ago, right, Mark? 3 or 4. A Faraday Future came driving in, and John Schilling, formerly of Nissan, know him.
Yes, sure.
He was there with a couple other Faraday guys, and they were showing it off very excitedly. That may have been the year when they sold those 10 that they sold. But there was one at our OC Cars and Coffee, South OC Cars and Coffee, like 3 or 4 years ago.
All right.
Moving on to the review section. You will not believe this. I just got off a plane, and I went directly to a movie theater, and I saw the F1 movie with Brad Pitt.
Yay!
So just so everyone knows, this is the kind of work, big air quotes around that word, that Mark Vaughn does for this Dracar show. He'll rush to a movie and see a movie for all you.
That's
listening.
What the car show pays me.
The dedication is impressive.
All the money in the world.
You know, did you sleep through it?
All right, no, I got to tell you. Okay, it's not as good as the Top Gun movie, the last one that this director did, but it is good. You will go to it. You will, especially if you know anything about Formula One. The opening scene is of the Daytona 24, right? The Rolex 24 at Daytona, whatever it's called. And if you go up, there's a shot that goes up into the, I don't know if it's the control room or something of the race team. And there's Patrick Long sitting there. I don't know if he says anything or not, but I'm going, I know that guy. That's Patrick Long. And sitting next to him, I'm pretty sure it was Tony Stewart, who had a couple of throwaway lines. So Tony Stewart, and that was just like in the opening little craziness at Daytona.
Awesome.
And then you start noticing all the, when they move on to the Formula One sections, you see, that's Silverstone and that's, you know, Yas Marina Circuit. And there's Monza. I've been there, man.
Saying is if they're trying to target all the racing geeks out there in the world, they got the recipe correct, clearly, because it worked on.
No, that is one of the things that you will enjoy when you're watching it, is picking out all these things that, you know, as a Formula One fan, you will enjoy picking them out and, you know, just seeing them. And it's fun. It's a fun movie. Go see it. I mean, if I don't say anything more, and I don't know how much time we have here to speak. I do know. We don't have much time. It is fun. It is a little bit, I was afraid it was going to be really cheesy and dumb. Like, you know, guys, a fella's got to do what he's got to get out there and do. And in fact, I wrote down a bunch of great quotes from the movie, you know, like one-liners. The question is going to be, is there a line like Dom says, I live my life a quarter mile at a time? No, I did not notice anything like that. But there are good lines. You know, it's not about money. So what is it about? And then they show him, you know, it's about racing. And Sonny, the Brad Pitt character, lives in his van. He had a terrible crash. He was in F1, very promising driver, terrible crash. Back in the 90s, he disappeared for 10 years, became a gambler, got many divorces, and then he came back as a driver, and he's, you know, driving just anything. And they show him, I'm not giving away any, well, it's obvious. You will know what's going to happen. It's a very predictable movie. You know, will this scrappy underdog team win? Yes. Golly.
Oh, golly.
I'm not
gonna say, they won't. Of course they won't. It's going to be a Rocky.
No,
it's going to be a Rocky movie, right? They're not going to win it. Come on. Tell us that.
It's a little bit similar to Rocky. There are a lot of things that I think are unbelievable. Not about the racing. I thought they did the racing very well. It's a good presentation of the excitement of being in a race car on a track with other guys around you. And there's a lot of presentation of the strategy of each race. You know, we have these three-stop strategy or two-stop strategy. We start on the hards, we go to the softs, we go back to the hards, and then the rain comes, and should we pit for the, you know, they didn't say rain tires. I think they said intermediates. So there are things that if you want to bludgeon it with your knowledge of Formula One, go ahead and bludgeon it, but don't do that. It's just fun. It's fun. There's even a love interest, which is complicit. It's so predictable. But anyway, I mean, you know, who wouldn't fall in love with Brad Pitt? Michelle, you're our Orange County Bureau Chief. Wouldn't you?
Well, we're exactly the same age, so, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. It's meant to be, is what you're telling us. Okay.
Exactly. Brad. He's overlooked, you know, I guess he doesn't want lawyers or whatever, but.
He doesn't want lawyers. Okay, that's the
reason. Or he's done with blondes. I don't know.
He's done with blondes. Blonde lawyers.
It's his loss. That's all we can say.
His loss.
That's right.
Brad, if you're listening, if you're, you know, on your way up through the Hollywood Hills to mansion number 86, call Michelle. Yep. All right.
Yes.
Thank you. Anyway, it is a fun, fun movie, and I just got such a kick out of picking out that, you know, the people I was with, I'm going, hey, that's the real, you know, that's Toto Wolff. He's a real person, a real, you know, and Toto has a speaking part in it. I don't think Hamilton, I don't think he spoke, which was really unfortunate. There was a part where they should have had Hamilton as a character or whatever speak, and they didn't. There's a journalist, an auto racing journalist in it, and of course he's portrayed as just this smarmy, evil, insidious Gollum type character.
So finally, there's at least one aspect of the movie that's realistic. Okay. Well,
No, it's not. You thought, but anyway, it is good. Go see it. You will enjoy it. Everybody's giving it thumbs up. I mean, the number of 5 stars, it's got a rating of 4.2. On Rotten Tomatoes, it's 84%. I think
Gucci is good for that.
Yeah, that's pretty good for rotten. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Mark. Thanks for the dedication to this show.
He took one for the team, Michelle,
came straight from the movie theater here to record this. Okay.
Okay.
So, let's see. What else do we have going on here?
Car reviews.
Car reviews. Oh,
or motorcycle reviews.
Motorcycle. Let's do motorcycles. Carl and I just got back from the mighty Rocky Mountains, where we were, I don't know, I thought we were going really fast. We should not admit what speeds we were going, but we crossed the Rocky Mountains at ungodly speeds in the Ducati Diavel. Right, Carl?
Diavel. Thank you. I was trying to record my video, and the Ducati crew is like, no, you're saying it wrong. You're saying it wrong. And it's like, and I've been saying it, you know, you hear a word in your head every time you read it and stuff like that. It's embedded. And to unwind that is not easy after years of seeing it and hearing it. But I got there. Diavel X. It's actually the X Diavel. Don't forget, too, because there's the Ducati Diavel.
Good point.
And then there's Ducati X Diavel. And this is the X Diavel V4. And so the most important thing to know is that the Diavel was the kind of cruiser, like almost like a Harley Davidson fat boy. What was it called? The rod. What was the Harley Davidson with the big rear tire and the curvy tank? something. V-Rod. Wasn't that the Harley-Davidson V-Rod? I think is what it was. But it came out in 2010 as a cruiser style Ducati, which they'd never done before. And it was like, what are they doing? Then they made the X Diavol in 2016. And it was supposed to be a more sporty cruiser. And now they've made it into a V4. The engine is essentially out of Ducati's MotoGP bike with all the same technology. So they keep kind of jamming two different concepts harder and harder together. They keep getting the bike more and more technologically advanced and capable on a performance level, while it looks like a Harley Davidson and you sit on it like a Harley Davidson with forward controls and your hands out to the side and stuff versus a super bike or even a standard. So it's kind of a bizarre contradiction in philosophy. And what's more bizarre is how well it works, in my opinion, but I've said enough. What do you think, Mark?
Well, it's the most interesting thing. I sat next to Jason Chinook, the CEO of Ducati North America at dinner last night. Cara was down on the other end of the table. I don't know who you.
No, I sat right on. No, I sat right on the other side.
Right opposite me.
You
right.
And I were on each side of
you. You were there. Yeah. And one interesting thing that he said is that most of the buyers of this bike are conquest buyers. So
yes,
they do have a lot of Ducati buyers sort of moving up, but a lot of them are conquest buyers. And of those conquest buyers, the major source of new buyers for this Ducati are Harley buyers. And
yes,
I thought that was quite interesting, because one problem with that Harley is facing is that the growing, aging demographic. They are just getting too old to ride, sadly. So
right. And the other problem with Harley is that they're not pulling in new buyers. And we know, you and I both know, you were on one of these recently, that Indian has pulled a lot of the wind out of Harley Davidson sales, because everything Harley Davidson was, the Indian brand was kind of more so, whether it was the coolness or the style.
And Indian, we're going to do a full review of an Indian model that I have just spent a lot of time on. But Indian does the Harley stuff, you're right, a little bit better. Just a little bit better. It's a little bit tighter, a little bit better steering, and
a little bit cooler looking, I think. A little more Harley-ish looking. It's like Harley styling, but a little more so and all. And so now you've got Ducati chipping away at them on the other end with this.
Yeah,
with
but I will say that Ducati comes at that cruiser market, sport cruiser market, with a much more sophisticated machine than
100%.
Either Indian or Harley Davidson may ever offer. They're just, I don't think they're capable of coming up with something like this.
And that's why Harley's gotten caught in the middle and they're really in trouble. Because if you're a traditional Harley buyer looking for the ultimate Harley thing, you buy an Indian. And if you're a potential Harley driver, but you never really were into those because you wanted to have like more sophistication, better handling and all that, you buy the Ducati. So who's left to buy the Harley? Well, the old it's Harley or death guys, and those guys are all dying.
Well, that's true. But some of them find themselves over in the Ducati bin. Now, this bike starts at just under 30 grand and kind of goes up from there. And that's 30 grand before they throw in the delivery charge and whatever else they might offer. But it is a – yes, Carl?
I was just going to say 193 horsepower, 168
horsepower, 93 pound-feet of torque.
Yeah, my numbers
and one thing that I noticed was that 168 horsepower and the 93 pound-feet of torque. It's not one advantage of a Harley or an Indian is right when you start twisting the throttle, you feel the torque. And you can use that, you know, to keep your Indian upright as you're going around a corner, as I found out a while ago. And that is not the same performance that you get with this Ducati X Diavel V4, because that it really comes alive. I felt like it was coming alive about 6,000 RPM. Jason Chinook, the CEO of Ducati North America, said, oh, no, it's 4,000. You can feel it at 4,000. Yeah, you can feel it at 4,000, but you've got to be up about 6,000 before you really feel that horsepower and that torque. And that, you know, for a number of buyers, that's not necessarily a problem, because there are other bike makers who have these similar bikes where they take an engine that's really a high performance engine from a sport bike and they try to adapt it to either an adventure bike or a cruiser bike. So you have to deal with that as you
consider this if you are in fact considering a bike like this.
Well, and it only weighs 505 pounds, and they actually got it to lose, despite going from a V-twin. So remember, the last name, part of this name is the X-Diavol in, it's the X-Diavol V4. And before it was a V2, it was a 90 degree V-twin. Now it's a V4 MotoGP engine, which you would think is more complex. It's going to need more cooling, more stuff to make it work. And they lost 9 pounds through other efficiencies and lightweighting efforts. So it's slightly lighter, but it's got two more cylinders and it's more powerful. And that's a pretty good power to weight ratio by cruiser standards. And they say that it'll do 0-60 in under 3 seconds. And
did you try that launch mode thing? I didn't.
I mean, it sounded a little scary, but there's a launch mode on the thing that's kind of like launch mode in a car, where you're supposed to pull the clutch, rev the engine. You know, once it's in launch mode, you pull the clutch, turn that throttle as hard as it will go, and you dump the clutch.
I got clarification on that. You're not supposed to dump the clutch. You're supposed to engage the clutch.
Okay.
And the difference is, if you do that on a car, you'll either stall, or if you don't stall, you'll be pushed back into your seat. On a motorcycle, you'll fly off like Wile E. Coyote, and the motorcycle will continue on, which is not a good thing.
It sounded a little scary. The rear tire, that's the other thing, Mark, is, you know, I ended up, just the way they sequenced us, that basically the back of the pack, most of the drive that we were at, it was 170 miles, I think, they had us going up to Estes Park from Denver through Nederland, coming back down through Golden. And I'm watching that rear tire all around me as I'm watching all the bikes in front of me as we're snaking through as a group. And it looks almost ridiculous. I mean, it looks cool, but
it's this extended
single-sided swing arm. And then, this massive
grip
tire.
To burn.
240 by 45 17. I looked it up. That's the same size tire that was on the FRS. The Scion FRS. It's also the same size tire that was on a previous generation Mercedes S-Class and the second generation BMW 7 Series. It's the same exact size tire.
I got to see this.
it looks really cool. Crazy. You see that on like when a motorcycle customizer picks a rear tire, oftentimes they go with a really, really big honking sucker. This is a Pirelli Rosso Diablo 3 or something. On the back. And so one thing about that, we're going along at a really good clip. Again, I don't want to say exactly what clip we were going, but there was never any sense that there was a side slip or anything. This would have gripped on. This is one of many bikes that you will think, golly, this bike is much better. It has more performance than I can extract from it, or that I am willing to try to extract from it. So
yes. And the single best thing about it is they use a counter rotating crank, which reduces the gyroscopic effect even at higher RPM. All that translates to, in the non-technical terms, if that's what you care about, is it just leans over super easy. So with all that grip you just mentioned, Mark, and how easy it is to initiate a turn, you know, you just lean, you push on the inner grip. If you're not ride a motorcycle, that's actually how you're supposed to think of it. You push on the inside of the grip at speed, and it leans into the corner. Does it so easy?
We are down to 30 seconds left here of recording. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Michelle, for coming on. Everybody, go see the new movie F1. You will have a blast. You can bring a date. I think it has wide-ranging appeal to whomsoever you choose to date. They will like it too. You will like it. You, as a race fan, will get a big kick out of it, as I did. Go see the F1 movie. Again, we're not paid to say that. Stick around for Rhapsody in Black music that sounds great on your car radio, and we will see you next week on The Car Show.
Hi, Diane here. I'm the co-host of Something's Happening at Midnight on Monday through Thursday, midnight to 6 a.m., with a message from our interim general manager, Maggie DePeek. So you may have noticed some outages in our signal lately, and the reason is our transmitter is really urgently in need of some repairs. Since we're listener-sponsored, we're coming to you. The good news is a generous donor has already donated $25,000, and that will be matched by the rest of us for a total of $50,000. And then our chief engineer, Stu Landau, and longtime KPFK ally and a top radio engineer, Bert Wiener, they'll take care of the rest. We only have until July 31st, so please call that number 818-985-5735, option 2, or kpfk.org and click the Fix the Signal banner. Every dollar counts. Thank you in advance for your generosity, keeping us strong and on the air. Let's fix the signal together.
Let the music keep our spirits high. Let the buildings keep our children
high. You're listening to K.